Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. It's about the halfway mark for the citywide celebration of glass artist Dale Chihuly. It's a good time to catch up with Columbus Museum of Art Executive Director Nanette Macy-Junes. Hi, Nanette.
Hey, how are you, Ann?
And also Franklin Park Conservatory Executive Director Bruce Harkey. Bruce, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Good morning, Ann.
It's a good time to catch up, but it's also a good time to talk about the exhibit for those of us who have not seen it yet, either exhibit. I call it an exhibit, but actually it's two. And it's been in Columbus, the Museum of Art since September.
September.
And then the conservatory
since July. 4th of July.
So it's about 6-month mark for that and 4-month yep. mark or so for this. But they're both leaving when? Is it at the same time or?
Actually, Franklin Park leaves sooner. We leave at the end of March. So the studio will be back to remove the temporary pieces.
And we go through July 4th.
Okay.
So it truly is a year-long celebration since mm-hmm. Bruce opened in last July.
Exactly. How did it come about that you worked together on this project? You've done others before, but this is special.
We've done projects together before. Actually, I worked on the original Chihuly exhibition at the Columbus Museum of Art, which was the Chihuly over Venice, where they were giant chandeliers in the 90s in all of our galleries. And then when the conservatory did their wonderful show in
2004,
I worked with Paul Redman on that exhibition and the museum. At that time, we created a partnership and we did Lino Tagliapietra, who was a glassblower that worked originally with Chihuly and then broke off. So we did a collaboration then. And okay. So when this came along, it seemed natural to collaborate again.
But when this came along, didn't you make this come along, or were you both operating independently and chatted one day and found out you're both looking at the same sort of thing at the same sort of time?
I think both institutions are always looking into the future and trying to figure out future exhibitions. And the conservatory, after the 2004 show, the community came together and purchased the entire collection. So we own the largest signature collection of Dale Chihuly's glass in the botanical garden world. And so we had planned to do an exhibition, and Nanette and I were chatting probably over a glass of wine one evening. And, you know, the rest is history. And we brought our teams together and figured out a schedule where we could bring both of these exhibitions together in a new way with deeper levels of partnership than have ever been seen, I think, in the community.
And one of the things that, you know, people in Columbus always love things. Bruce and we were all chatting before we mm-hmm. got on air to saying that people love to crow about things in Columbus. Something to crow about. This is the first time ever that Chihuly has had an exhibition simultaneously in an art museum and a conservatory in the same city. So we broke completely new ground with this exhibition.
It is something to crow about, and it has brought people to Columbus.
Oh, indeed.
What are the numbers? What do you know so far about the attraction function?
Are you tracking that?
You know, we're tracking where people are coming from, and about 50% of our visitors are coming from outside of Franklin County.
Yeah.
So I think we're getting a lot of people, especially during the summer. We actually pulled our show forward from October to July to take advantage of all those staycationers. And it worked. A lot of people decided to rediscover local attractions like the conservatory and the museum, and we had great attendance all the way through the summer.
And I think what's exciting is not only are people coming from the ex-urban area, which is what you see when you get popular exhibitions, mm-hmm. but we're seeing people traveling. I mean, I'm constantly running into people who have driven over from Indianapolis, or they've come down from Cleveland, or they've come over from Pittsburgh. So I think the regional draw of these exhibitions, and again, it's one of those times when if you have two reasons to come to Columbus. You know, there's two things to do. I like art. There are two great things to do. And then we also actually had the Glass 360 partnership as well, so that there were other glass projects going on around the city that you could also visit when you came to Columbus. So I think it's been a great regional draw for us.
If you've just joined us, my guest this morning, Nanette Macy-Junes, Columbus Museum of Art Executive Director, and also Bruce Harkey, Executive Director of the Franklin Park Conservatory. We are talking about right now their joint effort exhibiting Dale Chihuly's work in Columbus. It is the largest exhibition of its kind. It's the first time ever that he has been exhibited in both a conservatory and an art museum at the same time in the same city.
Yes, that is true. Anywhere in the world.
Anywhere in the world. And he is world renowned. So it begs – well, I don't know what to ask first. What's the relationship? Why is it so special with Dale Chihuly and Columbus? What's the connection? Or should I ask first maybe for you to describe Dale's work, you know, and what he's known for and a little bit about his career as an artist?
I think Nanette should talk about the relationship first.
Well, should we talk about the relationship or
sure.
who he is?
Well, let's talk about who he is and then the relationship.
Well, Dale Chihuly is one of the sort of rock stars of the glass world. And I think one of the things that those of us who aren't as closely, you know, watch the contemporary glass world is to realize that the contemporary glass world is really not all that old. There was this sort of renaissance in glass in the 70s and the 60s and the 70s. And you really had a whole new generation. And Chihuly is one of the early, figures in contemporary glass who he's influenced an incredible number of people. And he has a very distinctive style. When you see these, you know, you even talk to people who go to Las Vegas and they're like in the Bellagio, they go, yes, this is a Dale Chihuly ceiling. I mean, people, they have this incredible, they're these incredible colors, the forms that you see, the chandeliers, and they're immediately identifiable. There are a lot of imitators now. Now, there are a lot of really great glass artists that have used the inspiration of Chihuly to do entirely new work, but you actually see imitators as well. But he's become just literally a rock star. I mean, he is one of those people that he is so well known that it's far beyond just people who collect contemporary glass. I mean, you can name the next 10 great contemporary glass artists, and very few people beyond the art world would know them unless they were collecting them. But Chihuly's sort of this incredible figure. One of the things that many people don't know about him is that a number of years ago he had a horrible accident. And he, you know, people were always asking, why does he wear that eye patch? He actually, the accident was so severe that he lost his depth perception. And imagine being an artist that, you know, since you were a very young man, that what you wanted to do was blow glass and be, you know, doing that probably all. I mean, I know other glass artists. It's very, it's something that just takes you and you want to do it all the time. Can you imagine that? And suddenly, by not having depth perception, you really can't do it anymore. Glass has always been a collaborative. You go all the way back to, you know, Renaissance Venice. Glass was blown in a collaborative way. And Chihuly has always had a collaborative team. But now he has to take a different role in that team because he actually can't, you know, blow the pieces himself. And at the museum, there are the drawings.
I was just going to mention the drawings, which is a whole nother dimension of the process that was sort of an afterthought in a way. They're his designs.
And, you know, interestingly, I was not so interested. I'm going to be open and say I wasn't so interested in these drawings at first. I love when you see them cheek to jowl on this kind of wall. But when I realized that these drawings are the way that he has stayed connected to the creative process as part of the team, they have a whole new meaning. Once I really understood that, I went and sat in front of them for a really long time because I thought, oh, this is – They compel you by realizing this is his way to keep it going. I mean, that's quite a challenge for an artist. Like, think about being – well, you think about – okay, is it Beethoven that went
– deaf?
Deaf. I mean, think it's the same kind of thing. Beethoven goes deaf. The idea that you lose the ability to do that one thing that is
– your passion.
That is your passion that connects you to your whole reason for being.
Right. The drawings were fabulous. I wasn't expecting them. And there's other things about the exhibit. There's so many things about it in both locations that make it multidimensional. Certainly worth going back more than once to look at it, I think.
Oh, we agree on that.
Yeah.
I agree.
Well,
you need to come many, many
plug
times.
For
this
our
is a great time of the year also to do that, to see it during the day. But then on Wednesday evenings when we're open late or Thursday evenings when we have cocktails at the conservatory, you can come and you can see all of the glass when it's been it's lit. And so it takes on a completely different life. And one of my favorite areas of the conservatory in the evening is up on the rooftop garden where all of the red reeds are on the grove.
Right.
And I've been waiting to take a photograph of the Palm House with the James Terrell lighting installation when the building turns to green, with the red reeds, with the snow. So we had our first snowfall last week. So I, you know, I quickly ran up there with my camera and my coat, and I waited. And I, yes, I waited until the building turned green, and it was just an exquisite picture. And it's been a couple of months since I've gone through the show in the evening, and it reminded me of really how beautiful it is and how different it is than the experience during the day.
And in the fall or the summer.
Absolutely.
I mean, we talked about that last fall when we first met about this, that it changes over the seasons at the conservatory. It changes with the seasons, with the light.
It does.
Every single time.
And then I think the other interesting thing is because we work together on the exhibitions, the conservatory and the museum worked on creating different experiences in the two different institutions.
Exactly.
Because the museum could do things that the conservatory couldn't do, and the conservatory could do things we couldn't do because, you know, I don't have any wonderful plants like Bruce does, and I don't have a James Turrell either. But we do have – there's this wonderful piece that's in the center of our exhibition that – because we can turn the lights down really low all the time because, you know, the plants won't die.
Plants need light for photosynthesis.
But there's a piece in which it comes right out of Dale's studio. He keeps it very close to him. It's a very personal piece, which has the Native American blankets that he collects and the Native American baskets. And then he's blown glass inspired by him, by the things that he collects himself. And then he has this giant tree. Oh, there's a giant tree.
It's gigantic. It's like something out of Lord of the Rings or something. It's like an ent.
That was felled for that. And then Bruce has a great tree.
Yeah, we have a great tree, too. There was a tree that was one of the oldest trees. It was on Broad Street. And the Chihuly Studio has been doing installations with pieces of logs and reeds, beautiful reeds. And we suggested using this old oak tree that had died and using that for an installation in the studio. Loved the idea. Yeah. And the original idea was to cut off the limbs. I mean, it's quite large. So the idea was to cut off the limbs, cut it into pieces, actually dig the tree up and helicopter it into the courtyard, reassemble it so that it would have this sort of magical quality about it that, oh, my gosh, how did this tree grow in this courtyard and then fall down and not – you know, completely destroy the building, and then have all these beautiful turquoise and blue reeds that were blown in Norway about 20 years ago. Well, as we started cutting the tree down, we discovered that it was hollow. So, you know, you have to be quick on your feet, and so the studio came up with a different idea, and we still put the pieces in the courtyard, but we assembled them in a different way with all these beautiful reeds. And that is, I think, one of the most exquisite pieces and one of my favorites because after the show ends in March, that installation goes away. That installation has never been done anywhere in the world. And what I think is so special about art and those type of experiences is that they're so transient. That if you don't see them at that moment in time with that light or, you know, that Turrell lighting the cupola in the distance or the snow or the fall leaves, it's gone.
That is true. You know,
yes.
That's exactly true.
It's organic still.
And I think it is the reason that I bet Bruce has the same experience I sometimes have. You know, you're out somewhere and you meet somebody and they ask you, they realize where you're from and then they say, well, what's going on there? And you start talking and then you'll say, well, have you been to the museum or have you been to the conservatory? And they go, oh, I was there once about 10 years ago. And you're like, what? I think what Bruce just articulated, though, is the thing that we keep trying to talk to people about. It is a very transient experience, and it's different each time. And so you want to come back and see the conservatory every different seasons. You want to come back and visit the museum and see works of art at different times in relationship to different things. And in the case of Chihuly, it is unique. They come in and design those exhibition installations uniquely for each institution because they fit the space, the light. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, you could say, "Well, I saw that piece." Well, if you didn't see it in this installation, you didn't see it this way.
Well, an interesting example of that: when the studio came to install our show, we designed the show, and then it's very organic in terms of what pieces are put where, and the designers have a lot of flexibility. And there are these beautiful Persians that were being installed in the atrium, and then we have another installation that's near the new special events entry, and I went over there to look at them, and there were yellows and blues. And I said something to one of our staff members, and the story came up, and I don't know if it's true or not, but they said, well, he graduated from U of M, and so he was saving oh all God. The yellow and blue ones to put at the special events entrance. Of course,
say.
I was horrified. Fortunately, all of the, I think the blue pieces are trimmed with this exquisite bead of red glass.
Uh-huh.
So I had them change the plants to some red plants, which really drew out the red, so it didn't look so U of M.
Oh, my gosh. We have to take a quick break on that note. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
Hi, we're Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers. You know, a lot of people consider themselves automotive experts.
I have this theory that it put all the strain on the alternator from the battery and...
Kelly,
stop. You're hanging yourself.
Stop.
It's getting embarrassing now.
It was a great idea, but give it up.
Why not run your theories by us and 5 million other listeners, too?
Join us for Car Talk.
Car Talk Saturdays at noon on WOSU NPR News and Classical Music. 59 degrees in downtown Columbus. Clouds today, there is a slight chance of afternoon rain and a high of 65. Rain likely this evening, maybe a thunderstorm, a low of 45 degrees. More rain on Saturday and cooler temperatures with a high of 52. And there is a chance of showers on Sunday as well and a high of 48. And stay with us on WOSU 820 NPR News at noon. Fresh air will be here. The Gospels are at odds with each other on the important points about the life and death of Jesus. On the next Fresh Air, a discussion with a Bible scholar about these contradictions and what they tell us about the historical Jesus and the authors of the Gospel. That discussion at noon on Fresh Air, right here on WOSU 820 NPR News.
Support for WOSU comes from SAFI, Specialized Alternatives for Families and Youth, envisioning the day when every child is part of a loving family and is able to reach his or her greatest potential. Information is online at safy.org.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher, my guest, Nanette Macy-Junes. She's the executive director of the Columbus Museum of Art, and Bruce Harkey. He is the executive director of the Franklin Park Conservatory. You know, you can hear Nanette. She is will be on Arts Unscripted. I think it's once a month. She's WOSU's Christopher Purdy and Columbus Museum of Art executive director Nanette Macy-Junes. Discuss arts in Columbus and around the world. It's unscripted, so you never know what Christopher and Nanette might say.
And we say some pretty strange things. That's good. We've covered lots of ground.
I've heard. And it's available by podcast at WOSU.org, and you enter arts and culture, and it will get you there. We have Nanette here right now. If you would like to speak with Nanette or Bruce, give us a call, 614-292-8513. You can email us as well. allsides@wosu.org. And also, if you'd like to look at Chihuly while we're chatting today, you can go to chihulyincolumbus.com. I think that's chihuly-in-columbus.com. And you can check out some of the beautiful artwork that is here now.
And get all the details about when we're open and everything right. That's going on.
There are links
on,
to our, I think, our respective
links.
Websites.
Yeah.
Right. And go see it for yourself, because, of course, what we're just talking about and going on and on about, because you can't say it enough, is that art changes with the day. It changes with the moment. It changes with who you're with. It changes with your own life experiences. It, to me, it's like, rereading a book. I'm one of those people who reread books often. My kid still doesn't get it, but every time I read a book, reread it, I get something different out of it. And it's just that simple. It's the same sort of idea.
I was going to say, there are people, you know, it's exciting to travel around the world to see a special garden or a special museum and artworks. But one of the great gifts of having an art museum or a conservatory in your community is literally growing up and growing old with different works of art. And you're right, the work of art doesn't really change. The plants didn't really change. You changed, and your experience changes accordingly. So it is very much about your experience.
What we were talking a little bit earlier about Chihuly and his art, the art itself. What about that relationship with Columbus? I'm sort of interested in that, because Columbus isn't the Bellagio. It's not Las Vegas. Actually, I was going to mention the Chihuly work in the Bellagio was mentioned on Top Chef.
Really?
And it's used as an inspiration. And she, I think she was voted off the show that day, but because it didn't come close. But why Columbus? What is it about Columbus that he must have a soft spot in his heart for it? Because some of the stuff in the museum, some of his pieces are so personal.
Well, you know, I do think it's sort of one of those things where you think about the early times of your life where, for example, when you heard, you know, symphonic music for the first time or you went to your first play, they're the kind of things that you treasure because they're transformative in your life and your perception of life. And I think for Dale Chihuly, when he was early in his career, Columbus was there. He was selling his glass in Columbus and then the early show at the Museum of Art. And I think when you develop those relationships in what I would call your formative years, they're very special. Of course, all the relationships you develop in your life are special, but those early relationships, I think, are very special.
And Columbus knew him when, in other words.
Columbus knew him when, and we've had great relationships both in terms of galleries and the museum and the conservatory, and the relationship continues to grow and becoming more and more special, I think, as time goes on. We've had the great opportunity to go visit his studio, to visit the boathouse, and I think it takes the relationship to a new level when you understand the spirit of the person and what drives him and inspires him to create this beautiful art.
And by having the collection at the conservatory, and the museum owns a great chandelier. We own several pieces. Most people think when they think of us, they think of that great chandelier from the show in the 90s. And there's an incredibly active glass community here. I mean, the collectors in cities take on different sort of passions. And we have a lot of passionate glass collectors. And by having, for instance, Hawk Galleries, which was one of our partners in this project, they really have kept an active interest in contemporary glass here in Columbus. And Chihuly's, of course, again, the
well, and Ohio has a history of
Toledo.
Glass.
Toledo.
And so, you know, you think about Toledo and the different glass companies and studios, I think there is this very natural relationship.
Are you there, Nanette?
Yeah, I hit the volume button. Okay. Suddenly Bruce is very loud, right in my ear.
He's sitting right next to you, but it's too loud. You know, reflected light. Let's talk about the titles of the exhibits. At the museum, it's Chihuly Illuminated.
Yes, because a little-known fact that very few people know, hence a little-known fact, is that he started out early in his career doing a lot of neon work. And the very first piece that's in the main part of the exhibition, there's a piece in the lobby that's illuminated. I'll talk about in a minute. But when you go up to the main exhibition, there's this fabulous installation of it actually looks almost like the glass tubing had become soft and then melted and recongealed. Mm-hmm. It's just so strange. It's this field of actually lit neon tubing. And it is a recreation of one of his very first major pieces when he was a young artist. He redid it for the first time for the San Francisco exhibition, the big retrospective that's been more than a year ago. And we begged for him to do it for us. So we wanted to focus on this aspect of his work. And interestingly, he's come back to illuminated work. Now, of course, there's always the idea of light and glass is, you can't have great glass without, you know, the idea of reflected glass, but actually lit glass. So he's come back to the neon idea, and one of the things that he loves to do now are things called tumbleweeds, which look like these crazy,
Tumbleweeds.
They look like tumbleweeds.
Or they look like your hair on a bad day. I'm not sure. It's like
diaphanous cotton balls.
But and again, we really were interested in the tumbleweeds, and we have two of them in the museum lobby, and you could see them out of the garden right past them. And, you know, they kept saying no. And we said, we're giving those to the conservatory.
Well,
and
we don't want them.
We exhibit those at conservatories. Because sometimes it's interesting. You kind of get locked in, and that's how they perceive those pieces as a team. And we're like, Bruce's like, well, we don't want them. We wanted this. And we kept saying, well, we want them. And they said, no, we don't put them in art museums. And so it was really, again, groundbreaking. This is the first time that tumbleweeds have been seen in an art museum context. So
well, that's a really important point to make sure that the experience for the visitors to the conservatory and the museum so that the experiences were different. And we didn't want, if Nanette was going to focus on some of the neon pieces, we didn't also want neon pieces at the conservatory so that there is this completely different experience in the two settings.
Another thing, you mentioned reflected light and how important that is. And that's what really struck me with the two chandeliers that are in the first main room just past the weeping reeds or whatever you want to call it. Talk about that, because that's also
used. So many people miss it.
Yeah. And luckily I was with someone, your public relations.
Our marketing.
Marketing director. And she explained that to me, and I was so glad, because it shows you how three-dimensional, really, Chihuly, if you were just a little miniature person, would be a whole landscape. It's beautiful, every curve, everything. There's so many ways to see it, and you can see it there.
Yeah, each one of the pieces in the museum has a black plexi base underneath them, and they reflect, and so you look up to see the piece, but then if you look down, it's like an entirely different experience. And I think a lot of people worry about getting too close, and they're like, don't miss that, look down. And the exhibition at the museum culminates with this fabulous glass gallery that, again, they design it specifically for that space. It's this garden will never exist again. It exists only for us. And again, it is as if the garden floats on almost like still water, and you're looking down into it and see all the pieces reflected. And you miss half the show if you don't look down.
You know, of course you want to touch the pieces, and of course you don't. But you having it reflected in that way gives you such an increased vantage to see the piece in general. And of course you walk all the way around it. And,
the glass garden, you walk all the way around.
All the way around it and see it. And the chandeliers as well. You can see them all from all different points of view. But and the juxtaposition of the glass pieces with the baskets and the gigantic tree and the rugs and the drawings can't be overstated, I don't think.
Well, it gives you – I think we mentioned that personal thing we were talking about, his personal relationship. I mean, he the fact that – the conservatory owns the largest collection of Chihuly glass in the conservatory in the country. And so the fact that we were able at the museum to get him to do these very personal pieces. The two chandeliers actually were done in the months after his mother's death. And they were part of his sort of mourning and grieving process.
They're darker.
But once you realize the connection to a way of processing the death of a loved one, I mean, it becomes they're very personal. And I think that is something, again, it reflects his relationship to Columbus, Ohio.
If you're just tuning in, my guests are Nanette Macy-Jones. She's the executive director of the Columbus Museum of Art. And also Bruce Harkey. He is the executive director of the Franklin Park Conservatory. Together, they are showing the largest collection in anyone. Well, let's see. How do we qualify this? It's the first time ever that a conservatory and an art museum in the same town have displayed Chihuly's work.
And worked together
to do it.
And designed them together? Well, actually, it's the first time.
It wasn't by accident.
But it wasn't. I think it even goes beyond that, that we worked together, that we designed the shows to complement each other.
We went out to Seattle together. We met with the studio together.
We had dinner together. It was a good restaurant.
I heard you talked about it over a glass of wine, too. if you would like to talk about the exhibit yourself, like to speak to Nanette or Bruce, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can also see some examples of the exhibit on chihulyincolumbus.com. That'll give you links to both organizations, both institutions, and you can check out what's going on there and what they're doing with it. Bruce, at the conservatory, the exhibit is called Chihuly Reimagined. How so?
Well, as Nanette mentioned, we were very fortunate to have the community come together after the show in 2003, 2004. And I think they were really inspired how the success of that show raised the profile of the conservatory. And actually, the success of Chihuly was the moment in time that we were able to move forward on the master plan for the conservatory in Franklin Park. And we have just completed phase one of that plan. But the collection, by and large, was in storage. There were a few pieces that were on display, the chandeliers in the Palm House and the Sunset Tower in the Pacific Island Garden Room. And when we talked about the show, we wanted to make sure that people felt different when they saw the show. And so we adopted the concept of Chihuly Reimagined. And literally our position was every piece must move to a different location or be paired with different plants and flowers. And the only piece that hasn't moved is the Sunset Tower, because Dale Chihuly felt that that was so iconic that it should stay where it is. The chandeliers in the Palm House didn't move, but they were reconfigured. When the James Terrell lighting installation was installed back in 2008, it required 7,000 LED lights to be installed in the trusses of the Palm House so that you get this magical spectacle on the outside of the building changing colors every night for about an hour and a half, and the cycle repeats itself. So actually, in terms of bragging rights, Columbus was the location where Dale Chihuly's studio and James Terrell's studio came together to work to ensure that the pieces were balanced. And so, in fact, the chandeliers with the Terrell lighting installation are magically reimagined. We also decided to add three new pieces, which include the large oak tree trunks with the reeds blown in Norway, a beautiful boat with these purple and blue and turquoise globes and frog's feet, and then an exquisite chandelier in the desert. And then we added a hot shop that was running until, I guess, January. And that allowed people to really see how glass is made. Now, that hot shop will be coming back in March. So okay. So we've really tried to reimagine it. And one of the most interesting things I realized when we had our opening was one of our donors to the conservatory was looking at this beautiful chandelier. It's a polyvitro chandelier. And it's in the entrance when you first come in. And it's really quite large, but a lot of people miss it. And it was in the rainforest during the entire show. And she said, "Is that a new piece?" I said, "No, that's the whole point of the show, is that because we've moved it into the daylight, all of the metal colors really shimmer, and then it's exquisite at night." So that was the concept of the show, so that it's not the same show you saw in 2003, 2004.
How much is Dale Chihuly involved in how the exhibits are put together?
His team is very involved, and he has a incredibly creative team that he has around him, and it is very much an interactive with each institution. I mean, it's really, you build the exhibition together, you create the exhibition together, and they are very, very engaged in that. I mean, and they have there's a lot of give and take, and it's a great part of the— it's a great part of doing a Chihuly show is that creative process that you have with the studio.
And ultimately, I think the studio comes together with all the ideas, and then I'm sure they have at the studio, they have their meetings, their review meetings with Dale, and they say, "Well, you know, we met with the conservatory, we met with the museum, this is what we're thinking." He gives them feedback. They come back to us and say, "No, Dale doesn't want to move the Sunset Tower," and so the Sunset Tower stays. So I think there is this this great level of collaboration. It's not like the studio just comes in and says, "Okay, we're going to install everything here." It really is this wonderfully interactive process. And I think it's been great for the staff of both organizations. We have some very young people working on our curatorial staff, one of whom is a glassblower. And for her at this stage in her career to be involved in making decisions and offering suggestions about where pieces might go, and the horticulture department as well, in our case, what plants are going to be paired with these pieces in these new locations. The opportunity, I think, is so amazing, and it's really transformative for them.
Just to have an art that it's not static. It moves with the times. It's not just the people that come and see it, that the work actually changes itself every time they move it. It's different, and to have that kind of a experience as an artist must be amazing. It's different. I mean, you paint a picture, maybe you can change the frame, but the painting always stays the same.
Yeah, this is very different.
This is very different.
This is very different.
We're going to have to take a quick break. We'll come back to your calls. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
Corporate partners help provide support for WOSU 820. Your business can join them and reach an educated, engaged, appreciative audience every day. Your business will also be associated with a trusted source for national and local news, arts, and culture. For more information, contact Christine Schottich at 247-4469. And thanks for supporting WOSU 820, NPR News.
And you're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News. In 20 minutes at 11 o'clock, All Sides Weekend will be here with host Marilyn Smith and a discussion of the best foods and restaurants in Central Ohio. WOSU food critics Rich Terapak and Rich Terapak, father and son, and the restaurant widow, food critic blogger Lisa Dillman, join Marilyn Smith for the discussion at 11. That's All Sides Weekend right here on WOSU 820.
Support for WOSU comes from Ohio Wesleyan University, congratulating its students on receiving the Presidential Award for Higher Education Community Service. Last year, nearly 1,800 Ohio Wesleyan students gave their time and talent to help others. OWU.edu.
59 degrees in downtown Columbus. Clouds today, a chance of afternoon rain, a high of 65. Rain showers very likely this evening, and more rain showers after midnight, a chance of a thunderstorm, a low of 45 degrees. Rain on Saturday and a high of 52. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on WOSU 820 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. My guest, Nanette Macy-Junes, Columbus Museum of Art Executive Director, and also Bruce Harkey, Executive Director of the Franklin Park Conservatory. We're talking about their exhibits of Dale Chihuly's work. I think that the Museum of Arts exhibit lasts until through March.
July 4th.
I'm mixing them up. Yeah. Okay, we'll just keep saying this over and over again. And then at the Franklin Park Conservatory, the exhibit ends in March.
That's correct.
Okay, so you have a couple months to see both of them. You can see the one at the Art Museum until July 4th. What a great holiday trip that would be. We have an email from Jerome. He writes, "My wife and I decided not to renew our family's membership to the Columbus Museum of Art, largely because of its most recent Dale Chihuly exhibition. We like Chihuly, really we do, and we understand the need for museums to develop long-term relationships and for museums to show works that people want to look at. But there have been so many Chihuly exhibits in Columbus that we feel, simply, enough is enough. There must be other artists out there, even other glass artists, that are worth showing. We are also not members of the Franklin Park Conservatory. One Chihuly exhibit, too many." You probably have heard this criticism. I mean, there's always going to be somebody out there that disagrees.
Sure. I think that's the great thing about opinions. People can have many. It's interesting. We have heard that on occasion. But what we're seeing is we had 1,800 people come to the opening, and we were open on New Year's Day and had 2,700 people, which is an incredible number of people for the museum to have in a single day. And last year, our attendance was the second highest it's ever been since we've been keeping track of attendance. Mm-hmm. So I think there are a lot of people who haven't seen it. The thing that I think that's been sort of a recurring theme today, mm-hmm, on this show is that one of the things I have heard is people said, okay, I came down because I felt I needed to come. And then they're like, oh my, I was very surprised. It's a very different show. I had no idea. So, I mean, we've heard a lot of that too. Another thing that drove this was it was a great opportunity to work together. And I think that those collaborations really do matter. But it's a legitimate, certainly, opinion.
It was joint fundraising as well.
That was the first time
we had done joint fundraising. And I think the fact that we had come together to do joint fundraising for this exhibition was significant. And, you know, I think the beauty of living in Columbus as well is Columbus is a young, dynamic city. Every year we have so many new students who come to the community. And so while there may be people who have seen shows like Dale Chihuly before, there are always new people who are in the community. There are people who missed the shows before, and I think that they're very glad that these shows are back because it is something very special for Columbus.
And this is our first time in a decade. I mean, our other Chihuly show was in 98.
Right.
And in 2003 and 2004, when we worked with the conservatory, we did Lino, which was to the previous emailers. I agree. There are a lot of other great glass artists that we would like to work with. And so we've done it kind of both ways. So.
614-292-8513. If you would like to call, to comment, or question, we'd love to have it. Patricia, you're on the air.
Oh, good morning. I'm calling, I guess, because I can cancel out the emailer's vote. I decided to join the conservatory as a member after seeing the Chihuly exhibit weeks ago. And I also enjoyed the exhibit back in the spring, which had the work of Andy Goldsworthy and other artists. But if anyone out there has a free afternoon, I definitely encourage them to go by the conservatory. It's just absolutely beautiful.
Patricia, what was your favorite piece?
Oh, man. Oh, just, you know, now I'm trying to think. In the courtyard, there were the bluish spheres coming out of the ground. Well, not spheres, like sticks or something. Those were striking. They were kind of plain, but it was really striking to see that on the way to the glass blowing exhibit, the hot shop.
Okay.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yes, absolutely. Those are the reeds with the oak tree that held from.
That's absolutely stunning. And I have to say, I didn't mind seeing the maze in blue.
And red. There was red in there, too. You have to.
And there will be no bolt of lightning, I swear.
But did you wear red on New Year's Day?
In fact, the red kind of messed that up.
Yeah.
Absolutely gorgeous. Well, the bowls, everything. And you just stand there and wonder, how do they do that?
That's right. It's
my goodness.
I think the sense of wonder, and you know, for us, it's I forget this sometimes that you know in January and February where you know you just literally cannot stand the weather anymore. I can just slip out of my office and I can walk into the Pacific Island Garden room or to the it's great to work in that tropical environment, especially when you know Columbus is so dismal. You can be in all this green space.
Exactly, and then there's the overhead. I think it's on the way to the cold portion. Overhead there are like maybe 100 small pieces in a skyway, and it's so beautiful.
Those are that's a really interesting story. This is a great example of the collaboration between the staff and the studio.
Mm-hmm.
That ceiling used to be in the ramp that goes from the atrium down to the show house on the way to the Palm House. And we wanted to move it, and our chief operating officer, Ann Bonansegna, suggested moving it to the Himalayan room. And we contacted the company that built those caves during Ameriflora in 1991, and they came and they chiseled out two squares that were the exact same size as the glass that was used on the ramp.
That has been
moved to that area, and it's a completely different experience, and that's the only you know, sort of cave with the glass ceiling.
Yes,
it's our
gorgeous
mini version of the, Bellagio, I guess.
Mm-hmm. But it's absolutely beautiful.
Thank you.
Well worth an afternoon.
Thanks for your call, Pat.
Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye. Or Patricia. Now, Patricia brings up a very good, important issue, which is membership. And, you know, someone canceled one, but another one joined. What are the benefits of membership come at the museum and at the conservatory?
Well, the benefit of being a museum member all the time, of course, is that you can come free all the time and you can join your museum and come many, many times a year.
And if you join as a member of the conservatory, I think there's this tremendous value. Over the course of the year, we have, of course, our beautiful plant collections. We have the new community garden campus that we opened last fall with all the wonderful programming about health and nutrition. We have lots of great installations or exhibitions that are coming up. Of course, January and February, we have the orchids in the Pacific Island Garden Room. You can come to cocktails at the conservatory on Thursday nights. We'll have Blooms and Butterflies opening in March. And then this summer, we're going to have a really exciting exhibition called Savage Gardens, which is the real and imaginary world of carnivorous plants. So we put up a little display so people can get a taste of that. But, you know, imagine.
No pun intended.
No pun intended.
As long as the plants are going to taste of you.
That's right. That's right. But these, you know, this beautiful bog that will have all the wonderful horticultural plants that are carnivorous plants, and then we're going to have four really large, sort of supersized sculptures of carnivorous plants, and several of them will move. And I wanted to make sure that the Venus flytrap, you know, moves so that the kids could be in the picture with this moving Venus flytrap. And then, of course, in, you know, in the fall, we'll have our field-to-table fundraiser, and then the holiday show is coming back. So it's going to be a great opportunity, especially during the winter when you want to get away and go into a tropical environment.
Yes.
The conservatory is a place to be.
Well, that is great. I was going to say the thing that's we're under kind of very interesting circumstances at the museum.
Right.
We are in the middle of a renovation, which is we are in, indeed, because we're in the middle of a renovation, we're still in the middle of a capital endowment campaign. And we have there's a wonderful building. When you come to the museum, there's this beautiful Italianate building with this little tile roof that most people don't pay attention to. It was actually the original building for the art school back in the 30s.
Okay.
And we've renovated that building and moved the staff over there. And then this fall, right after we opened the Chihuly exhibition, we had closed our historic 1931 building, the building that faces Broad Street. It was originally opened in 1931. And we are living out of the modern part of the building with the Chihuly exhibition and selections from the collection. Because by next December, we will be done with this incredible renovation of the historic building, of the Beaux-Arts building. Derby Court will have a beautiful new glass canopy. Derby Court is the court that's in the center of all the galleries on the second floor of the museum. When you're walking around galleries 1 through 10, you're like, what is that in the center? That's Derby Court. And it was open to the sky from 1931 to 1953, and then they put this really heavy ceiling on it. So we're taking that ceiling off. We are putting this beautiful glass canopy over it that will be lit. And we are boldly raising the floor. Because for accessibility. So we'll be able to address all the accessibility issues. We'll be able to buy all new lights for the art. We're going to relight the collection. It's going to be incredible. And then on the ground floor, we are turning the ground floor into the Center for Creativity, which will be this incredible multi-generational space. It's a learning space for all of us that'll have hands-on activities, an all-new auditorium that's completely wired and great sound. And by the way, for those of us who know us, who are thinking, is she going to fix the sound system in Derby Court? Yes, we are. We're going to have – the acoustics will be fixed. But it'll be a fabulous time. So we've got great stuff going on at the museum till then, including a great summer exhibition. We're going to be free in July and August this summer again for summer fun. We're going to have a show called Fur, Fins, and Feathers. It's all about animals and art for families, and there'll be lots of activities. And then we have two great contemporary shows coming for the fall that I'm going to keep under my hat because they are going to be really kind of very spectacular.
You have to have some surprises.
We're in the middle of this great renovation, and will be followed by the addition of about 40 to 50,000 new square feet.
Wow.
And we'll be all done by the bicentennial, end of the bicentennial, 2012.
That's the goal. You know, I was going to bring up the issue. It's something I thought about when I first visited the museum, and it's that wow factor that Patricia talked about, the caller talked about, that especially affects children in a way that sometimes two-dimensional art does not. And the children respond to Chihuly very strongly. And I wanted to know about how many more kids you see at the gallery and at the conservatory. Now, conservatory attracts kids a lot, and I know that the gallery's always, you know, the art museum's always open to children, and you welcome them with open arms.
Right. We have lots of great education spaces and everything, but that's another thing I always am sad when somebody says to me, well, I'm waiting till my children get older to come to the art museum. I don't want them to destroy a work of art. I'm like, they're not going to – it's going to be fine. It's, you know – We know how to take care of the art. You come and have a great time, and there are great spaces both in the collection and in other spaces that are education that you can just really have a great time with your family. I was pleased to see how many big families came on New Year's Day. We had, you know, families of 3 to 5 kids. They brought the neighbors, and they had one little girl that came in, and I think they must have prepped her to do this, but it was so cute. She came in and her mother said, and why are we here? And she was about 3. She goes, to see Chihuly. I was like, okay. It's so cute that she was a 3-year-old, and she really did actually know what Julie was. She really knew what the show was and who he was.
Well, I think it's great for kids. And what we're noticing at the conservatory is, of course, we get lots of kids for Blooms and Butterflies
right.
and all the different educational programming. But we're getting the older kids as well, because you can learn about, you know, chemistry and art and math by viewing the glass. And you can see it in a different way. And we shouldn't take for granted how art can move children or plant collections can move children and just the beauty of the world. I remember in the fall walking through the space over by the tree with the reeds, mm-hmm. and this little boy was coming through with his entire family, and he said, "This place is like heaven in a building." And I thought, what
oh,
an amazing perspective. And I wish, you know, I wish I would have thought and got his name so we could have used that quote. But I think that children – when they're exposed to, you know, to art and to culture and to, you know, sports and all the things, you never know what is going to resonate with a child, which will strike their fancy, and that will become their future career and their way of sharing their gift with the world.
And their expressions of it is so – it's pure.
It
is, innocent.
Absolutely.
They haven't read it somewhere.
Yeah, I was going to say, we have a new preschool program, and it truly amazes me. I love to see the whole, you know, preschool groups in the galleries. We take them into other spaces too, but they're actually with the art. And I think that is to see them actually talk. I mean, it still amazes me that you can 3 and 4 year olds can really, they can learn to talk about art and express not only the wow, but actually talk about stuff. It's an incredible, and we now know by education that creativity is the thing that we're going to need for the 21st century workforce. And experiences like the Conservatory and like the Art Museum are critical to getting our young people to think out of the box, look at the world in a new way. That's what we need for the 21st century. There are fewer jobs which are, you know, rote. It's more about that element of creativity, which also just enriches your whole life.
And you can't just read about it.
No, you got to get involved. You got to experience it. You got to get down. You got to get there.
You got to get there. You can get there in a couple different ways. You can join. You can go. You can visit anytime you want if you're a member. You can also go to the websites for the Columbus Museum of Art and the Franklin Park Conservatory. They are on our website, WOSU.org. You can get to links from there, WOSU.org. And you can hear Nanette Macy Junes with Christopher Purdy on a podcast. It's called Arts Unscripted, and she's with him about once a month. And apparently it's unscripted, so you never know what Christopher and Nanette might say. I have to say goodbye now. Thank you very much, Bruce and Nanette, for being with me today. It's been great. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.